Chapter 37. Randy stared out the window of the top floor of the right-hand tower of the South Gate. He and Professor Goosewaddle were there by the king's request. Occasionally, one of the residents of the Horse Head would glare up at him from the rampart.
"Lower the gate," said the king.
His voice was low and grim, but resolute.
"Brother, you can't," said Desmond. "There's still refugees coming from Port Town. Women and children, Winston."
"That's exactly what the orcs are counting on. They mean to exploit my merciful reputation. My scouts reported that the orcs aren't advancing up the road. They're staying under the cover of the forest on either side. Any minute now, they'll start pouring out of the forest as near as they can to the wall, and we won't have time to lower the portcullis. If they take control of the gate towers, the city is as good as lost."
"That's no army, brother. It's a mob. We have wizards and sorcerers on the walls. A few well-placed fireballs will scatter those orcs like the cockroaches they are."
"Has your vision failed you? Have you just not noticed the giant flying boat sailing this way? The one flanked by 3 red dragons? There's a 600-year-old lich at the helm seeking to end our bloodline. We can't waste spells on orcs."
The king turned to the guards manning the gate crank, who appeared to be stalling until the argument was settled.
"Your king gave you an order. Lower the gate!"
It took 3 soldiers to push the shafts sticking out of a central axle, which fed the heavy iron chain connected to the top of the gate. They each gripped their shafts and started pushing counterclockwise. As the gate started lowering, Randy gripped the stone ledge and leaned forward. The nearest refugees sprinted to beat the closing gate, in many cases discarding belongings they had deemed important enough to travel for miles with. Sadly, the ones with children seemed to be lagging the farthest behind. They weren't going to make it. Randy had never felt so helpless. He wanted to plead with the king to keep the gate open a little longer, but if his own brother couldn't convince him, Randy surely wouldn't be able to either. Besides, Randy knew the king was only looking out for the people already within the city walls. The responsibility to make decisions like this was something Randy was grateful he'd never have. Desmond, the king's brother, morphed into a golden eagle and flew out of the south window. Randy was mildly curious about where he might be flying off to, but his attention was drawn to Professor Goosewaddle, staring gravely southward, not at Desmond or the doomed refugees, but at the approaching boat. Part of why Randy liked the professor was that he never seemed to take things too seriously, like he'd lived long enough to brush off as trifles what younger folks often viewed as tragedies, always maintaining a sunny and cheerful disposition. That wasn't how he looked now. The professor looked old, tired, and even a little scared.
"Something on your mind, Professor?" asked Randy.
He knew it was a stupid question, but he had to break the tension.
"Dragons,"
said Professor Goosewaddle, not taking his eyes away from the flying boat.
"They pretty badass. They're extremely powerful and vastly intelligent, but they are mortal. Put enough arrows in them, and they'll drop out of the sky."
That sounded good to Randy. He frowned.
"I feel like there's a butt coming. But they're also selfish and fiercely independent. It's rare to see 2 red dragons of that size working together. Seeing 3, seemingly subservient to one master, makes me wonder if all the arrows and spells in the world would be enough to fell that ship."
Desmond was returning, gripping a screaming toddler by the arms in his golden talons. Randy and Professor Goosewaddle stepped to the side to let him in.
"Have you lost your mind?" said the king. "I can't fight a war with this noise."
Desmond took his human form.
"I thought since you were about to make him an orphan, you'd be best suited to raise him."
Without waiting for a response, he turned back into an eagle and flew out of the window again. Parents were raising their children above their heads, trying to get his attention.
"Desmond, come back!"
the king shouted over the wails of the child.
"Gods have mercy! Somebody take this child downstairs!"
"As you command, your majesty,"
said one of the 3 guards manning the gate crank. Randy suspected he was just happy for an excuse to get the hell out of there. With the gate now completely lowered, a crowd of refugees was pooling at the base of the wall, all shouting to be let in.
"Fire!"
shouted a soldier on the rampart to Randy's right. As the king had predicted, orcs had begun to charge out of the forest where it was nearest the wall. They were met with a barrage of arrows, dropping a few of them instantly. But for the majority of them, a single arrow wasn't enough to take them down. Orcs poured out of the forest faster than the archers could kill them.
"Fire!"
An identical situation broke loose to Randy's left. Dead orc bodies were piling up along the base of the wall. but they were dropping closer and closer to the huddling refugees, and the torrent of orcs flowing out of the forest showed no signs of letting up. The night air was alive with the twangs of bowstrings, orcish battle cries, the screams of terrified refugees, and the pounding of heavy boots racing urgently up the stairs.
"Your Majesty,"
said a high-ranking soldier, judging by the quality of his armor. The king winced.
"What is it now?"
"Northgate has been breached."
"They're attacking from the north, too? How did they get in?"
"Not in, Your Majesty. The breach was from the inside. They got out."
The king balled up his fists.
"That pig-headed bastard! He had one job! Do nothing! How hard is that?"
"Who?"
said Desmond, who had returned with a little half-elven girl.
"What happened?"
"Balhar, my most cunning general, has taken it upon himself to disobey a direct order. That's treason. I'll have his pig head on a pike."
"Calm down, brother," said Desmond. "This is partially your fault for keeping him penned up when there's a war to be fought. You denied him his purpose. He only wants to serve you. That's no treason."
The news-bearing soldier cleared his throat.
"There's more, Your Majesty. They wear tunics identical to the enemy's."
He lowered his eyes.
"Complete with the blood fist of Meb-Gashur."
Randy knew what the receiving end of betrayal looked like, and that's what he saw in the king's tired eyes. He'd been frustrated and madder than hell just a second ago, but now he was heartbroken.
"There must be some mistake," said Desmond. "Balhar's a good man, Winston. He wouldn't do this."
The king looked down at the scared, half-elven girl hiding behind Desmond's leg.
"This is a disaster. I failed my people in every conceivable way. Go, Desmond. Save what children you can."
"Excuse me,"
said Randy.
"I'm sorry to interrupt, but if Balhar was going to betray you, why would he sneak out the back? Why wouldn't he just march his orcs up here, chuck all us out the window, and force the gate open?"
The king furrowed his brow and pursed his lips.
"That is an excellent question."
"Steady on, men!"
cried the soldier, giving commands on the western side of the south rampart.
"They're falling back!"
Randy poked his head out of the window. Sure enough, the torrent of orcs pouring out of the forest had slowed to a trickle, each one getting three or four arrows in the chest as soon as he cleared the trees. As the screaming and shouting died down in the immediate vicinity, more distant screaming and shouting could be heard coming from the woods. After a moment, orcs began running out of the forest farther away from the wall in every direction. The archers on the wall all looked at each other, collectively shrugged, and started casually picking off orcs as they came within bow range.
"What in the abyss has gotten into those fool orcs?"
said Desmond, having returned with another child.
"Bedlam,"
said the king, gazing out at the sudden change in the tide of the battle.
"Complete and utter chaos. I'm afraid I owe Balhar an apology."
The cry of a baby brought his attention downward.
"Quickly, raise the gate!"
Randy ran to the crank and manned the third shaft himself. Together, he and the two soldiers turned the crank clockwise, and the gate began to rise.
"Your Majesty,"
said Professor Goosewaddle,
"by my estimation, the Phantom Pinnace should be within range of your more advanced spellcaster's fireballs."
The king joined the professor at the window.
"Can you hit it from this range?"
"I believe I can, Your Majesty."
"Then fire at will."
Professor Goosewaddle rubbed his hands together and licked his lips. He closed his eyes, cupped his hands in front of him, as if cradling an invisible globe, and mumbled some words in a language that Randy didn't even come close to recognizing. When he opened his eyes and hands, a marble-sized but intensely bright orange sphere hovered in place for a second, then darted away so fast that Randy almost couldn't follow it. Upon reaching the flying boat, the sphere exploded into a massive fiery orb, which did little but expose the even more massive invisible orb surrounding the boat. Some sort of force field.
"Just as I feared," said Professor Goosewaddle. "The pinnace is protected."
Randy did not giggle, but somebody else finally seemed to get the joke. A deep, hollow laugh echoed out from the boat. It was your quintessential evil villain laugh, and it grew louder with each bellowing repetition, drowning out all other sounds until it abruptly stopped. The night was dead silent. No one dared breathe. The huddled masses at the gate stopped pushing their way in. Those refugees still on the road stopped in their tracks. A ray of green light, like the beam of a searchlight, shone out from the front of the boat onto the people frozen in fear, standing in the open gateway. The light scanned west along the base of the wall, shining on the multitude of arrow-ridden orc corpses, which began to twitch and moan.
Lower the gate,
whispered the king. His voice trembled. Nobody moved. The green beam locked onto the gate again, then scanned along the eastern part of the wall, shining its evil magic on the piles of dead orcs.
Lower the goddamned gate!
The bad news soldier assisted the two others in turning the crank counterclockwise, but they were far too late. The crowd at the gate screamed. Those already inside the walls fled deeper into the city. Those on the outside of the walls ran back out onto the road or into the forest. Undead orcs swiped their powerful arms at anyone who got too close, but didn't chase after them. They appeared to have their priorities in order, and those all amounted to securing the open gate. Archers on either side of the gateway fired their arrows, but they were ineffectual against the undead. When the gate was low enough, 24 orc zombie hands grabbed the bottom and shook it back and forth until they had pulled it free of the tracks it slid down on and crashed onto the ground. Hundreds of orc zombies flooded into the city.
Your Majesty, said the bad news soldier, it's no longer safe for you here. We must get you to a secure location.
The two soldiers, who'd been manning the gate crank, drew their swords and took the defensive positions at the top of the stairs, ready to hack away a path of undead orc if need be.
Go, Winston, said Desmond. We'll find a way through this, and your people will need you more than ever.
The king shook his head.
I've done it again. I played right into his hand.
He allowed himself to be escorted to the stairs. Things had gone from bad to not so bad to really bad in a very short amount of time. Randy had been trusting the king's wisdom to get them out of this like a person might trust the pilot of an airplane that's clearly headed into a mountain and all the engines are on fire. He couldn't let the king leave without giving him some kind of guidance.
He said, Your Majesty, is there anything specific you'd like us to do?
The king looked up at him and smiled sadly, his eyes full of resignation and despair. He shrugged.
Pray.